This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Poverty and child poverty continue to drag at the state of Illinois, even in an expanding economy, because the social service support network remains badly eroded.
We're just not doing enough, even after the budget crisis is over, to invest in fixing the massive holes that it left behind.
Katie Butrago of the Heartland Alliance Social Impact Research Center tells Eric Stock what that means in central Illinois. Plus, the Challenger Learning Center celebrates the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 mission, a Next to Normal Story Slam story from correspondent Brianna Groh, and the Illinois Politics Roundtable. All that and a GLT News update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from GLT listeners. Join the community of news consumers who listen to Sound Ideas and are also willing to support it financially. Learn more about listener-supported radio and GLT at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. McLean County has more than 25,000 residents living in poverty, according to a group that has placed the county on its poverty watch list. The Heartland Alliance tracks data which show some concerning trends in McLean County and across Illinois. Katie Butrago, director of Heartland Alliance's research unit, tells GLT's Eric Stock the state had 67 watch or warning counties based on the most recent figures from 2017. That's 15 higher than the year before.
Some of the factors that accounted for the increase in the number of counties on our watch and warning list, 78% of counties had a higher unemployment rate in Illinois, so that points to concerns about employment throughout the state. 62% of counties saw an increase in the teen birth rate, and 58% of counties had a higher poverty rate than Illinois does. And so this, you know, this data just provides a broad snapshot of what's happening on the ground. So we didn't go in depth into what's happening, you know, county by county to cause each of these issues. But I think, you know, these numbers, most of the data are from 2017, because there's always a lag between when data is collected and when it's reported. And I think it still really reflects a state that's reeling from the budget crisis and the lingering effects it had on our human services infrastructure. We're just not doing enough, even after the budget crisis is over, to invest in fixing the massive holes that it left behind in our infrastructure that moves people out of poverty.
What level of concern should we have, given that all of those numbers are trending in the wrong direction?
You know, I think it shows that we're not doing enough in Illinois to invest in moving people out of poverty. The rest of the country has returned to pre-recession poverty rates, but in Illinois, our poverty rate is still higher than it was before the recession. And we're the fifth largest economy in the nation. We could be doing better than we are at investing in ending poverty.
Now, the state budget, well, after several years of state budget impasses and stalemates, the state did adopt a budget this year that seems to address poverty on some level. How does the state budget address poverty from what you see, directly or indirectly?
So the state budget provides a lot of needed certainty for human services field, but it doesn't do enough to fully address the problems that the state budget crisis caused. You know, many human services providers had to lay off staff or close their doors or take out lots of credit in order to stay afloat. And the level that we're investing now just doesn't do enough to repair those damages.
What more can or should the state do?
We need to invest more in human services and income support, and we need to make sure that we are raising adequate revenue for budgets that support anti-poverty infrastructure. We also need to improve wages and job quality so that people aren't just subsisting with work, but they can actually thrive. And we need to modernize our tax code. We need a fair tax system in Illinois where higher rates apply to higher incomes and lower rates apply to lower incomes so that we can capture the incredible revenue that's being generated in Illinois and invest in moving people out of poverty.
Well, Governor J.B. Pritzker has made that a pledge that he wants to do, and voters are going to consider that next year. So do you see that if voters approve a progressive tax, that would change the dynamic considerably?
I think having a fair tax in Illinois would do a lot towards righting our human services infrastructure and making sure that we're adequately prepared to address the significant barriers that counties throughout the state see.
And this is Sound Ideas. I'm Eric Stock with Katie Butrago, director of the Heartland Alliance's research unit. Now let's take a look at McLean County. Why is it on the watch list?
So McLean County has a higher poverty rate than the Illinois average, and its poverty rate also went up from last year. Its unemployment rate is getting worse, and finally, it's seeing challenges on teenage birth rates as well. It's both higher than Illinois, and it's gotten larger than last year.
And most of the 14 counties on the warning list are downstate, but there are two in central Illinois, Ford and Peoria. Distinctly different economies, demographics are quite different, but how do you explain those two?
This data, again, is just a snapshot of what's trending in these counties. We didn't look into each county to understand what local economic and political contexts are causing these issues, but Peoria has a higher poverty rate than Illinois. Its poverty's gotten worse in the last year. Its high school graduation rate is lower than the Illinois average, and it's gotten lower over the previous year. It's got higher unemployment rate than Illinois, and the teen birth rate has gotten higher than it did last year. In Ford County, the poverty rate went up from the previous year. Its high school graduation rate is lower than the Illinois average. For unemployment, it's both higher than Illinois, and it's gotten higher than the previous year. And it's showing challenges on teen birth rates, both that it's higher than Illinois is and that it's getting higher than it did the previous year.
And for counties on the watch list, like McLean, what should they look to do to avoid making the warning list or eventually getting off the watch list?
We're hoping that these data really spark local conversations where you can look closely at, you know, what are the local conditions? If we're seeing trouble with unemployment rates, did a major employer just leave? If we're having issues with high school graduation rates, have we changed how we're investing in our schools? So we're hoping that this gives communities the power to look at the situation on the ground, understand what changes might be happening, and advocate with their leadership to make changes that would address these issues.
As the numbers have been progressing in the wrong direction, how long has this trend been going on in Illinois?
The last 2 years, we've seen the county watch and warning list get bigger. And we've also just been struggling with high poverty rates ever since the recession.
Do you expect those numbers to rebound somewhat in the coming years? And is lag time a factor in that?
You know, I think it'll really depend on what our leadership throughout Illinois decides to do in terms of investing in anti-poverty programs. And we're also affected by the federal climate as well in terms of, you know, much of our state funding to address poverty is ultimately sourced from federal investments. So I think it'll really depend on our leadership at many levels to make decisions about investing in anti-poverty to see whether these numbers will rebound.
That was Katie Butrago, Research Director for Heartland Alliance, with GLT's Eric Stock. She says people of color still bear the brunt of Illinois' fiscal troubles as the population faces higher poverty, unemployment, high school graduation rates, and lower rates for having health insurance. She says that's due to centuries of institutionalization of giving opportunities to white Americans and raising barriers for people of color. The McLean County Regional Planning Commission disputes the Heartland Alliance data. The Planning Commission uses five-year averages, which census officials say paint a far more accurate picture. It shows McLean County's five-year poverty rate is 14.5%, lower than the Heartland Alliance's most recent annual figure of 15.6%. Heartland Alliance says its data actually reflect the reality of poverty in Illinois.
Support for WGLT comes from the Black Dirt Music Festival, Saturday in the Castle Theater Rock Lot. Headliner, Backyard Tire Fire, plus Chicago Farmer and Friends, Matthew Curry, Edward David Anderson's Black Dirt Revival, and John Till. Tickets including limited VIP tickets at blackdirtmusic.com. This is 89.1 WGLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. In communities across the state in Bloomington, Normal, last Friday, vigils were held to mark the war on immigrants. And we'll have a report on one such event coming up from IPR. Tomorrow will mark 50 years since Apollo 11 took off from the Kennedy Space Center on a moon mission to change history. Challenger Learning Center, housed at Heartland Community College in Normal, has been hosting a series of events to mark the occasion, including demonstrations at daycare centers and summer camps, where volunteers give demonstrations in an Apollo spacesuit. The center's flight director, Libby Torbeck, tells GLT's Eric Stock she hopes looking back at NASA's crowning achievement will spark more interest in what the space program wants to do in the future.
Places that are having events, of course, and making a big deal about it, kids will go, wait, what's Apollo? What's the moon program, you know, and just their curiosity of what this even is gives us a good starting point. Another thing that's kind of fun about this anniversary is that it coincides with a recent announcement from the government about a new initiative to go to the moon. And so being able to look at that new initiative that's, wow, new and exciting, and compare it to, hey, did you know just 50 years ago this month we sent people to the moon for the first time? And that kind of allows us to draw parallels and look at the past and talk about the future. It's a great conversation starter.
So as you alluded to, the Trump administration said it wants the U.S. to return to the moon by 2024. That's in 5 years. NASA also wants to send astronauts to Mars by 2023. Do these seem realistic to you? And does this moon landing from 50 years ago help guide how we would go about it today?
That is a wonderful question. So I think that being on the moon in just a few years is a rather ambitious goal. And the goal of sending astronauts to Mars has kind of been readjusted because the moon is going to be a way station. But in terms of the previous moon landings, we've learned a lot from those and from experience since that's guiding how we are deciding to set up the current moon missions. So, for example, we're looking at launching a capsule on a tall rocket again, like we did with the Apollo program. But this time, to get to the moon, we want to have a space station orbiting the moon that they can connect to and then land from there to the surface of the moon, and kind of it's going to be called Gateway and kind of create these different pieces after what we've learned from the Apollo program.
And it's also been 8 years since the U.S. had halted its space shuttle program. Have you noticed a difference in the interest level of children since then? And you've been in the business for close to 9 years.
Yeah, I actually have noticed an interest. We just had the anniversary of the last space shuttle flight. And when that happened, a lot of people asked me, oh, are you closing your doors? Are you going to lose your job now that NASA is closing? And it's been a whole lot of, oh, hold on. And so the focus in recent years has shifted to planetary science, the bevy of robotic space probes and rovers and landers. We have a great armada of science robots. And so kids' interest has kind of shifted naturally towards the robotic aspect. And it's been easy to hook them with that. To talk about how we're still very much active and alive in space.
Going back to the Apollo moon landing 50 years ago, about to mark the 50th anniversary, certainly a transformative moment in our history. How much do you worry that this moment will fade without ongoing public advances or another attempt at a moon landing in a couple of years? And are you concerned that Americans in some places have maybe lost interest or feel that it's too costly or too risky along those lines?
We've definitely even seen here people who think that the space program, yes, too costly, too risky. Hey, we're not going somewhere else. We're just hanging out in Earth orbit. Who cares? We should be spending our money on the Earth. What a lot of people don't realize is that the space program ultimately is about bettering life on Earth. The advances we make in building lunar spacecraft and landers and the sciences we do in the space station always end up benefiting the people back down here on the Earth. And I think it is important to have times and places where we remember those things from the past and call that to mind, because we can use that to spur people on to think of new things and, wow, look what we did in the past with this much technology, and look at what we have now. What new amazing things can we do? So, yeah, I definitely think we don't want that to fade from memory, but it's crucial as one aspect in helping spur people on towards the future.
And what more might we learn in a return trip to the moon?
So some people think we've learned everything there is to learn about the moon, but that would be like taking a dirt sample from your backyard and saying that you understand everything about North America from that single sample. So one of the charges of the new moon program is to take samples from what we call the dark side of the moon, the nighttime side. Or the southern side. You know, there are different areas where we haven't even taken samples yet. So we'll get to learn a lot more about the moon. And one of the important things about studying the moon is that it preserves processes that have been happening to the rocky planets since they came to be. But on places like Earth, erosion and plant life and people cover those processes up, but the moon preserves them perfectly. And understanding how things affect the moon again, they help us understand how it's going to affect the Earth and how we may be able to change or protect ourselves or what to expect and all these things. So even studying the moon helps us back on the Earth.
So it seems like to some extent we don't know what we don't know yet, right?
Exactly. And that's one thing I love about space exploration is exploration, going out to see just what there is.
And this is Sound Ideas. I'm Eric Stock with Libby Torbeck, who is the flight director at Challenger Learning Center, which is hosting a moon mission for adults and children on Friday, July 19th at 6 p.m. and One Giant Leap for Children on Friday morning at 9 at the Learning Center. And outer space has also become a new frontier for entrepreneurs. Jeff Bezos of Amazon fame, Elon Musk of Tesla fame, have both created companies. For Bezos, it's Blue Origin, and for Musk, it's SpaceX. Both have the goal of making it into space as well. Could this be a turning point where private industry takes over, where government-sponsored space programs have stepped back?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, the government is being charged more and more with working in partnership with those private industries because companies like SpaceX and Blue Origin, they are not under the same kinds of constraints, so they can prototype faster, try things faster, move more quickly. And so for the upcoming moon program, for example, NASA is looking at partnering with private industries to build the lander portion that will land from the gateway down to the moon. In fact, Blue Origin's lander, based purely on looks, is my favorite. It's called Blue Moon, and it has this really big central orb that looks like a giant moon.
Do you think they could make these advances faster, that they could get us to the moon faster or to Mars?
I think so, yes, because they have the advantage of being able to be more flexible and work quickly. They have their own challenges, and there is certainly something to be said for the safety regulations and things that slow NASA down. They're very safe. And so I really like that private industry is working in partnership with NASA. It's not an either or. We're going to try and get the benefits out of both.
And what do you think their ambitions are, their reasons for wanting to participate in this? Are they the same as the government? Is there a thought maybe of a colonizing someday or something along those lines? I mean, I guess that wouldn't necessarily be possible, but anything along those lines that would make their motivations different?
There are definitely a bevy of motivations, and there actually have been talks about colonizing someday, or maybe a private industry who wants to be there first, or who can afford to just say, we just want to explore, things like that. So there are definitely different motivations involved.
I know that President Trump has also announced plans to create a Space Force as a fifth branch of the military. They plan to have it established by next year. So if that's the new frontier for the military, would that be something that would spark more interest in the great beyond?
I think it would. I definitely think it would. I mean, we have the National Guard training facility at Heartland, the campus where we are, and we have kids that come through our programs who are intrigued and they want to know more about joining the military, and it'll be fun to be able to say, hey, you like space and you're interested by that National Guard stuff. How about the Space Force?
Well, I can tell you have a great passion for the space program. Can you explain how you got involved in it, where that spark was first lit for you?
Yeah. So in fifth grade, we learned about the planets in the solar system. And at home, my mother had us cut the planets out of foam core and color them in, and then we mounted them on the wall of our basement. And that was my first real memory of working with space stuff. And I was entranced by the planets. But then as time went on, that kind of went dormant. And then when I graduated from college here at Illinois State University, I was in education. I was looking for education jobs. And this job opened up at Challenger Learning Center. And so I looked into it and I found out it was a space simulator, and I thought, I should go to a space museum, you know, check this out. And I went into an exhibit called the Hall of Space that covered the space race, and it was like opening Pandora's box. Every model of Sputnik and picture of an astronaut, my eyes were just popping out of my head, and I could not get enough information fast enough. So then going to work at the Challenger Learning Center allowed me to keep learning. I had chances to travel to NASA facilities and see a rocket launch of my own. I got involved in a social media community of space geeks and things like that, and it just was a chain reaction. And then, of course, being able to see that light in kids just makes it even more special and wonderful for me.
That was Libby Torbeck, flight director at Challenger Learning Center in Normal. She hopes to see more girls get interested in the space program. The next moon mission is named for Artemis, the Greek goddess of the moon and Apollo's twin sister. NASA wants to put its first woman on the moon.
This time of year, the world gets more colorful. And while we don't all have a green thumb to make a garden flourish, or maybe we don't have a garden at all, we can all appreciate the beauty of a good one. On Morning Edition, you get a bouquet that's more wildflowers than roses, a collection of stories that are totally different, but work together and add color to your day. Weed out uniformity with Morning Edition from NPR News.
I'm GLT Morning Edition host John Norton. Join me weekdays from 4 to 9 a.m. on GLT.
Hear the top NPR and local GLT news stories handpicked just for you right now on the NPR One app. Listen to GLT newscasts and our biggest stories on demand, or settle in for some podcast listening. You can even customize your favorite types of stories. NPR One has it all. Think Spotify or Pandora for news. This is GLT.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Still to come, the meaning of fatherhood, a Next to Normal Story Slam story with correspondent Brianna Groh. Lights for Liberty vigils were held around the world last Friday. Demonstrators called for an end to human detention camps used by the United States along its border with Mexico. Around 100 people participated in the vigil in Galesburg. The rally took place in Central Park in the shadow of the towering bronze statue of Carl Sandburg, the Pulitzer Prize-winning writer and activist who grew up in Galesburg. IPR's Rich Egger produced this audio postcard.
This land is your land, sing it. This land is my land.
It's really encouraging to see that so many people care deeply about what's happening in our country. A care that manifests itself in sympathy and concern for the asylum seekers and their families who are seeking protection in our land of liberty, but also a care that shows itself in anger at the callousness and lawlessness of an administration that is trying to rewrite American values and take us back to the fear, nativism, and yes, racism of 100 years ago.
This land was made for you and me.
And it is our purpose here tonight and every day going forward, that we will fight those people who would seek to extinguish that flame, and that we would work tirelessly again to make our nation a light unto the world.
I once was lost.
Towns that welcome refugees are growing. They save their schools, they save their programs, they save their quality of life, and they enhance it. Galesburg should be promoting immigration and particularly resettlement of refugees as a development policy.
Our moment of silence are for the many who have been caged and who have felt forgotten.
We need to come together as a country, as a people, to stand for human beings. So I'm asking you, I'm begging you today, with this candle, this light in your hand, let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. So join me today in this little light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine. Come on, stand up, everybody. I'm gonna let it shine. Are you gonna let your light shine? This little light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine.
We heard from David Amore, Jeremy Carlin, Karen Kempworth, Monica Corsaro, and Pam Davidson. They spoke during the Lights for Liberty vigil held in Galesburg. It took place in Central Park in the shadow of the community's towering bronze statue of Carl Sandburg, the Pulitzer Prize-winning writer and activist who grew up in Galesburg. I'm Rich Eggert.
A similar vigil happened Friday night in downtown Bloomington. Read that coverage at WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Coming up, the Illinois Politics Roundtable goes around the horn talking about a Confederate flag flap in the state of Illinois. There are many ways to become a father, birth, adoption, marriage, but what does it mean to be a father? That's the question Jesse Weyer explored from the stage during the June Next to Normal Story Slam. GLT News correspondent Brianna Groh has more.
Many kids learn to tie their shoes from their father. That was the case for Jesse Weyer. But Jesse says that's about the only thing his father taught him in the 3 years the man reappeared in his life after walking out when Jesse was 3 months old.
I'm going to give you a short list of facts about my father because I only know a short list of things about him. His nickname, as he is widely known, is Collie. I wish I could tell you why. When I visited him between the ages of 9 and 12, he always had a fresh lineup of empty travel-sized liquor bottles on his headboard and on the shelf alongside his wall. And as a kid, all I could think is, where's he been? It's a question I would ask myself more as I got older about him until I stopped asking, where's he been? As a young man, he would get drunk or high and get in his van with his friends and drive through cornfields. He was small town reckless, a bit of a wild man, hard to pin down, as they say.
That same year the man called Collie left, the man who would become Jesse's stepfather came into his life. And unlike Collie, Jesse says his stepfather taught him plenty of things.
I think the lesson that stood out the most, the one that I remember the most, he said that a man was only as good as his word, especially a poor man, because sometimes that's all he could afford to give. I thought that sounded true. Unfortunately for both of us, he was a harsh teacher, like his father was. Sometimes his words hurt worse than his fists. Sometimes.
Looking back on the lessons his stepfather taught him, Jesse came to see some of them as harmful, imbibing him with a toxic masculinity he says he spent years fighting to unlearn. Jesse decided he would not have children of his own. He would work with them instead. Today, he works as a children's librarian at the Bloomington Public Library, a position rarely held by men. That's an important point for Jesse.
I used to work at a daycare here in town, an at-risk daycare center, and they stopped me halfway through the job interview, and they're like, we're going to give you the job. We need men in these roles. And as I worked there, I realized how true that was. I mean, a lot of those kids don't have father figures, or if they do, maybe like my father, they're not the best. So I wanted to provide that, a positive male influence, especially for young kids when they're still developmentally in that stage where they need that, I think.
One day at the library, Jesse had an interaction with a child that left an impression on him.
One day when a group of kids visited me at work, I told a bunch of silly stories, and on the way out, I was high-fiving them, as I like to do. One kid stopped in front of me with a carefree kid smile on his face. The one that I live for these days. The one that tells me that I am finally doing some good in this world. Finally. He looked up to me with that smile and said in a carefree, innocent little kid voice, I wish you were my dad. Like now, I choked up a little bit. I did not know what to say to that boy. So I just smiled at him. It was all I could muster. Luckily, I was in good hands, and he came forward and hugged me. step back for his high five, turned and walked out the door. Went about the rest of his day. Probably forgot all about it. But I haven't. My life is made up of little moments like that now because I am kind and patient and silly.
Kind, patient, and silly. The things that, as a quiet kid who loved to read, Jesse wanted from his own father. Today, Jesse has his own definition for the word that isn't limited to biological fathers and doesn't exclude men without kids of their own.
I think some of the most important, most influential people we meet in our lives, the ones who really help shape who we become, don't share our DNA.
Jesse remembers a lesson he recently shared with a young boy at the library.
We were doing scarf activities and songs, and I was handing out scarves to the kids, and one of the boys got purple scarf. And he said, "This is a girl color." And I kept going along and handing out the other scarves, and I was like, "There are no boy or girl colors here, just colors." And I was like, "I'm wearing purple today." And he just kind of like stopped, you know, and like you could see a little gears like... He was like, I hadn't thought about that. I'm sure he had been told. I mean, we are exposed to that idea very early on about what is masculine and what is feminine. And by the same token, white, black, like very early on, we learn all these things. We internalize them.
Jesse says his goal isn't to shape children's views, but to open their minds to new ideas and decide for themselves the kind of person they want to be. I'm Brianna Groh.
The theme for this month's Next to Normal Story Slam is a road trip and takes place at 7:30 Friday at the McLean County Arts Center in Bloomington. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The music group Confederate Railroad is threatening to overshadow both state fairs in Illinois, the main one in Springfield and another in southern Illinois, DuQuoin. The Illinois Politics Roundtable picks up on that topic. Sean Crawford moderates the panel, composed of Charlie Wheeler of the University of Illinois at Springfield, WTTW reporter Amanda Vinicky, and Brian Mackey of IPR, who says the issue has caused a big stir.
It has. And this is, you know, Illinois sort of dodged the national conversation a few years ago about Confederate memorials and Confederate monuments. Obviously, as the home of Abraham Lincoln and a strong Union state, I think I was doing a little research on this. Illinois was number 4 in the number of men that we sent to fight in the Civil War, something 250,000, I think. And so, you know, we did not have monuments to the Confederacy in Illinois, at least not significant ones. And so we were not part of that national conversation. But someone in the Department of Agriculture decided to sign the band Confederate Railroad. I think if you did not have the sort of... If you weren't thinking about this issue in a way that's sensitive to 2019 sensibilities, you can understand it's a popular band. It's been around since the early 1990s. From all reporting, I'm not a listener myself of the band, but from all reporting I've seen, they do not have racist lyrics or anything like that, but they do have this symbol. And Governor Pritzker has made a big point about the inclusivity and the respect for racial and other differences in his campaign, in his administration that he's put together. And so I don't think it's that surprising that when you have a band with that name in the land of Lincoln, that is going to raise some eyebrows. And so they made this decision. There are people down in that part of the state who are upset about it, as you would expect. So this is, you know, perhaps yet another area where you have this cultural divide where, you know, even though the flag of the Confederacy was a flag of treason, it was a flag of, you know, defending states that wanted to preserve slavery. It is something that, you know, people do sort of try to ignore that history and say that, oh, this is just Southern heritage. But Governor Pritzker is not having that. And so he asserted himself and canceled that concert.
Charlie, some people are saying this is censorship, that the, you know, that just like the rapper Snoop Dogg, who was expected to play at the State Fair here in Springfield, has some controversial imagery out there and also lyrics at times, misogynistic at times. That, you know, this is what artists, you know, they should be able to have these types of you know, freedoms out there, and that the governor is stepping on that.
Well, I look at the Confederate flag as being a symbol of something that is absolutely reprehensible. you have this mythology that's built up about the old South and the plantations and the bells and all of that stuff, that nostalgic stuff. The reality of it was a system that was predicated on the notion that folks like all of us on the program who have lighter pigmentation are inherently superior to folks who might have darker pigmentation. And that is just anathema to the idea of what this country is about. And that's what the war was fought. And I think anybody who uses that simple, in my mind, it would be like me starting a band and calling it Mein Kampf and using swastikas in my logo. I just find it very disgusting. And I understand people have this myth about what the South was like. But I think what the governor said in our opening cut was exactly true. That flag stood for a lot of things that are totally contrary to what the United States of America and our flag stands for.
And Amanda, you covered the governor when he made those comments this week. He didn't back down from that decision.
Certainly not. What I find interesting about it was that he made those comments at a press conference in Chicago. I would be willing to venture that there are many people in the city of Chicago that have never heard of DuCoin, let alone are they aware that there was going to be a concert there and that a band called Confederate Railroad was going to be performing. But this most certainly, I think, would have become a bigger political issue for the governor had he made a different decision. That is despite actually your former paper, Charlie, the Chicago Sun-Times publishing an editorial. You know, in a sense, considering this free speech, again, there's been comparisons to, okay, as you noted, Sean, Snoop Dogg is performing. Some of his lyrics are quite controversial. There are those who are upset that his latest album, evidently, I have to say, I've been to a Snoop Dogg concert. I haven't seen his album cover, but it involves a dead President Trump. And so people are very offended. So I think really the point here is what Brian had made in terms of we have very much a cultural divide in Illinois, and it has become a politically thorny issue for Governor Pritzker, be it his earnest beliefs and or a political calculation. It is one where he believes that the right choice for him, and I would have to say that matches with, as Brian said, everything that he has done in his administration that he espoused to do as a candidate, that matches with that and with really his constituency, the Democrats that put him into office, that would be very upset, I think. Probably, again, not only not knowing about DuCoin, but probably many hadn't heard even of a band called Confederate Railroad. But once this became an issue, he swiftly dealt with it, and this will all fade fairly soon.
Well, the governor is expected to go to DuCoin, and Charlie, you know, do you expect that he's going to be received warmly after this whole controversy? He is expected to be there to probably cut the ribbon and do the things that the governors usually do.
Oh, I'd be surprised if there weren't protests. I mean, some people have said that they're calling for a boycott of the DuCoin fair. And in my mind, that's really self-defeating, because if people decide we're not going to go to the fair, who gets harmed by that? It's not going to affect J.B. Pritzker. The impact on the state of Illinois, lost sales tax revenues, will be minimal. The people who are going to be hurt are the merchants, the vendors, the folks who will be there selling hot dogs and popcorn on the fairgrounds. So it's going to be a self-inflicted wound. So to me, that is not very smart at all. Yeah, Pritzker will have protests, but I'm sure there are also people in southern Illinois who would agree with the point that, yeah, this Confederate flag stood for a system of human bondage. Unlike a performer like Snoop Dogg, who does a stupid album cover, political satire, which is his right, the Confederate flag goes well beyond that in my mind. And as I alluded to earlier, in my mind, it's tantamount to the swastikas from Nazi Germany.
You know, something that I'll be watching in general, as you noted, there's calls for this boycott. Presumably, people will be angry. There may be a protest. But in general, how beloved will Pritzker be downstate, particularly as time goes on and some of the measures that he has passed will, at least when you hear from business owners downstate, really talking about the minimum wage increase, will he be beloved for that by those minimum wage workers that very much appreciate it? Or is this, again, a sign that he has talked about a downstate revitalization plan and trying to do more there? But I'm not sure that we have really seen a lot of that, aside from, of course, the infrastructure plan that he signed into law that will bring projects to all of downstate, and that, of course, includes a casino in the Walker's Bluff project, but in development. But I could see yet again this becoming, I think it's difficult for a statewide position to please all entities, and that could increasingly become an issue for the governor going forward.
Brian, before we move on from this topic, I just want to touch on the state fairs a little bit. You know, you've covered them. People may not realize you covered the entertainment beat for a little while. And what does it mean to have this type of controversy for, you know, any of the state fairs, either one of them?
Well, I think for this one, as Amanda said, I don't think the DuQuoin State Fair is on the tip of people's tongues, much north of Interstate, certainly Interstate 74 here in central Illinois, and definitely not in Chicagoland. So it does raise the profile. People know there's a fair there. And if there is a boycott or a protest, I guess that does harm the economy of southern Illinois. I've got to imagine, though, that when the rubber meets the road, as long as the weather's good, there are still other bands performing on different nights of the fair, that this is probably not something that's going to be that, I don't know. I would be surprised if there was a huge drop in attendance off of this. I think that these entertainment acts, you know, the if you are playing a state fair, no offense, to country bands, that is a fairly big thing. To music from other genres, and I guess rock, classic rock acts too. But, you know, the fact that Snoop Dogg, somebody I saw, a friend of mine texted me, you know, anyone arguing about how relevant Snoop Dogg is, just look at the fact that he is playing the Illinois State Fair, and that tells you something about where he is in the music industry these days. This is not, you know, considered the major concert venue, at least for sort of mainstream pop acts, that it maybe was in the past. I don't know. But, you know, certainly for country music, it's a big deal. And this is something that it does draw a lot of people out. But, you know, like I said, I think that, you know, sometimes you hear this, these critiques, this sort of protest. We'll see if that actually comes to fruition when people are making those decisions the week of the fair.
State Fair was a much bigger deal, and at one time it was the home of the Hambletonian, which is one of the foremost harness races in the nation. And that moved out, and the fair was in danger of just being totally closed when the state came in and bought it from its private operators. I think that happened under Jim Thompson. Uh-huh. And so we pumped a lot of effort, a lot of money into keeping the thing going for a boost to the economy of southern Illinois.
And just if I can extend my remarks from earlier, I want to be clear. You know, for country, I have seen some great country acts at the state fair. I've seen a few good pop acts, but I have seen some really terrible shows at the state fair, too. And I think, Amanda, you were there as well when MC Hammer was playing at the state fair. And, you know, at that point in his career, I mean, a lot of it, he was just kind of standing off to the side and had gathered dozens and dozens of audience members on stage to do the show for him. It was one of the least entertaining entertainment events I've been to in my entire life.
Unless you were on stage, in which case it was fun.
If you say so.
Amanda, were you?
I might have been, Charlie. I might have been boogieing up there, and that was a pretty great experience. I was just going to say, it's funny to me. I mean, this is yet another band controversy in still the first year of the Pritzker administration. You had the controversy of who was going to be performing the surprise performance at his inauguration, and then not knowing, of course, how much he paid to bring in Maroon 5 that ended up being this band for the Super Bowl halftime show that year. And then again, the governor not saying how much he personally paid to bring George Clinton to a birthday party for Secretary of State Jesse White in the waning days of session before there was a deal. And of course, session ending up going into overtime. So yet again, another one, this time Confederate Railroad, certainly not paid for out of pocket by Pritzker himself, but by the state. And I do believe that Illinois is going to have to pay a cancellation fee that, again, in the grand scheme of things, is not much money, of course, to the state of Illinois. But yet another band controversy for the governor.
Amanda, let's move on to the topic of Lori Lightfoot and some of the discussion she is having right now about adding a service tax in the city, at least considering that idea. What's the latest on that?
Well, so she apparently had a meeting with the governor and tried to make some pretty big asks. And obviously, these are private discussions that we're not privy to what all was said, but apparently was really trying to get the state to help take on some of the cost for Chicago's pensions, which are a huge expense, of course, for many cities, but because Chicago is so much larger, the expense is that much greater. And the governor having to come out and emphatically say, no, again, this was actually the early July that that came about. This discussion apparently then evolved into opportunities to pay for those pensions and the suggestion that a service tax might be part of that. There was also a suggestion about a retirement tax. That's something that former Mayor Rahm Emanuel had said should be done, a tax on retirement to pay for pensions. The Mayor Lori Lightfoot has not completely nixed that idea, but she did get more into detail on this notion of a service tax and saying that she would, she's a former attorney at a big law firm. She said, you know, I'm thinking about things like that. I don't want it to be anything that would be considered, quote, regressive, which is messaging that fits with Governor Pritzker's message as well. But it's unclear as to at this point, would this just be a service tax in the city of Chicago? But again, there are so many municipalities that have that massive pension debt. Could that be something that if there is any sort of will and way in the legislature could be expanded elsewhere? I just think it's some difficult decisions, of course, because already everybody knows that you're paying more for gas, that there is an increased tax on cigarettes. There is, of course, the graduated tax discussion. And yet another tax discussion could really hurt, I think, the governor as he tries to campaign for that constitutional amendment. So, whew, there's a whole lot of big financial troubles and no clear answers, as we all know.
Hey, Amanda, quick question. Did anyone ask Lightfoot whether she would consider doing it unilaterally using Chicago's home rule powers?
No, I think the expectation had been that she would go to the state. And frankly, she was not all that willing to get into detail. There was an initial press availability where she seemed to be frankly assessing, well, you know, this is something we're considering. It's not soup yet. And then by the next day had very much clamped down and said, we're going to come forward with a plan. She has not quite said what exactly she believes the deficit for her first budget year in the city of Chicago will be yet, and continues to say that she'll be out with plans soon and some sort of comprehensive, financial proposal. But also, she had a meeting with a bunch of community leaders this week in which she asked for it. So it really echoed some of the things that we've heard from Illinois governors in the recent past, and that is that things are in such dire straits, it's not going to be repaired in 1 year, and she asked for patience.
Brian, this has come up before, the idea of a service tax in the state of Illinois. It hasn't occurred at this point, but as Amanda mentioned, it could be something that some of these cities might get behind. At the same time, I can't imagine that Governor Pritzker wants to do anything that could jeopardize that constitutional amendment that'll be on the ballot next fall. So maybe this is something that is, you know, a couple of years down the road.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that we've heard for a long time now. Governor Rauner proposed a very narrow range of service tax increases when he was in office. Those didn't go anywhere in the legislature, though, because, well, obviously people are fairly reluctant about creating new taxes. Although I think that we have seen that maybe a dam begin to break on that this year, whether that is a sort of a one-year thing where they do the graduated income tax and pass rates for that and raise the gas tax and index that to inflation. We'll just have to wait and see whether that signifies a sort of a change and a willingness to reexamine the tax structure in Illinois. But, you know, the sales tax is one of the more regressive taxes we have. It's not, whether you're a very wealthy person or somebody of more modest means, you're paying the same tax rate on your whatever you're buying. So that, I can't imagine you'd include progressivity in the rates, but by choosing what you tax, in Amanda's story, I thought it was interesting. She listed off, based on a report from the legislature's nonpartisan budget forecasting arm, some of the things that other states around us tax, and some of that can be very sort of 1% things like private plane storage and things like that. Turkish baths, I thought, was an interesting one.
Me too.
So it's really what you choose to tax that, you can get some, if you're going to do yacht storage and private airplane maintenance, then, maybe you don't get as much money, but that also doesn't hurt people far down the income spectrum.
That's Brian Mackey, IPR State House reporter and part of the Illinois Politics Roundtable. Charlie Wheeler is the retired head of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois at Springfield, along with Amanda Vinicky of Chicago Public Television and Politics Roundtable moderator Sean Crawford. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal, made possible with listener contributions at WGLT.org. Our website is also where you can find Sound Ideas interviews and stories with help today from Eric Stock and Brianna Groh. I'm Charlie Schlenker. You can subscribe to Sound Ideas on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or NPR One. We want to know what you think of Sound Ideas. Comment on our Facebook page. We're WGLT-FM.